Hey everybody, this is Eric Mueller, the host of The Eric Mueller Show. You're tuned into the podcast that explores what makes any successful person's inner clock tick by unlocking the most impactful tools within their success portfolio. I'm joined today by John Ensley, who is leading a financial planning revolution to help you take control of your money, your lifestyle, and your retirement plan. Let's head on over to the interview. John, welcome to the show.
Eric, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being on, John. And I think I always like to start off with the success portfolio question. But with you, I actually would like to start off with, could you just briefly describe the conventional financial system and why you believe that it is corrupt?
Absolutely. I would love to describe that. And I think, so telling my story a little bit maybe is a good way to get there. So I got out of the military in the mid-90s and went to work for a company. It was a government contractor. And this was the buildup to the tech bubble boom. And I was in the right place at the right time. And we were going to do an IPO. And it was going to be amazing. We were all going to be wildly wealthy. And then, of course, if anybody is familiar with that era, the tech bubble burst. A ton of IPOs didn't happen, including the one for the company I was working for. So none of that materialized. And so there was a whole lot of lessons learned there with that whole experience. One of the things that catapulted our company that I was working for towards that IPO was actually some legislation that was going through that had to do with student loans. The company I was with was involved with the defaulted student loan collections or government contractor. And that legislation led to a huge windfall for the company I worked for, as well as other companies in that area. And so, you know, I remember these barbecues that would get hosted at our company location there with state politicians being there and so forth. And so that was kind of this first indicator. This wasn't a very big company, and I'm, you know, they had a full-time lobbyist in Washington, D.C. and all this stuff going on. So that was sort of my first inkling that there's more to this whole thing than meets the eye. There are people getting involved in laws for the benefit of private companies as opposed to, right? Okay. So I ended up leaving there, and I had some money in an employee stock ownership plan, fortunately. And I did some calculation, and I second thing that happened here is I realized that I was really exposed long term to being completely out of control of my tax situation with the money that was in this employee stock ownership plan. So I made the decision to liquidate it. And I decided I was going to invest in real estate. That was kind of a theme for me, right? I wanted to be in control. I wanted to kind of create my own destiny. I didn't want to be dictated to that, you know, no, you can't touch this money till you're X age or, you know, any of this kind of thing. So I took the money out and I started developing this small subdivision in Southwest Washington. And my plan was to build spec homes. And now by now we're into the early 2000s, mid 2000s. And so you can probably see where this story is going. I had these appraisals, these spec homes were going to be, was just going to be amazing. We were going to hit it out of the park. I was about halfway through the first spec home build in 2008. And so the market completely collapsed, everything tanked. I made some big mistakes. I tried to save the project. I borrowed money trying to get the project done before everything, and it didn't work, right? So so then, of course, as some people may remember from that time, the bailouts started happening, the TARP program, they started bailing out the banks. And so again, another bright light kind of flashed on, you know, what is going on? Why are these things happening? And it's you can't help but realize there's some corruption behind the scenes that causes some of these things to happen. And when you couple that with, I'd been to financial advisors, lots of them, and I thought I was doing all the right things, and it's just bad timing, not knowing what I was doing was a big part of it back then. And so, you know, I certainly take full responsibility for it, but at the same time, the economics and some of the things going on got me there. So it was kind of a wake up call for me. You know, in the midst of all that, I was getting a divorce and my whole life just kind of got shaken up. And, but I'm grateful for it today because it was a wake up call and I started studying and learning and digging in and trying to figure out, how things could be done better. And, I came across a webinar with an advisor who started talking about cash value life insurance, along with this financial plan and this investment plan. And it was the first time I'd been exposed to the idea that some kind of life insurance product could be something more than a death benefit. And I got very interested in that concept and continued to read and study and learn more. And so I kind of went down that road and I got a couple of policies. He uttered the words infinite banking somewhere in that presentation. And so that led me to some books and some more information. And I ended up setting up my own infinite, quote unquote, infinite banking policies and got very excited about what a great tool it is. And none of these financial advisors I'd been to over the years had ever mentioned anything remotely similar to this. So I knew nobody was talking about it. And I was ready for a career change at that point, was ready to be on my own. And so I launched my practice in 2012, J. Inslee Financial. And this is what I do. I help people understand these concepts and implement them for their own path and see how it works like it's worked for me.
Yeah, thanks so much, John, for starting off with that. And before we get into that, you know, dive deep into that financial planning expertise that you have with your company, now let's get to your success portfolio. So if you're new to this show listening, a quick background on the success portfolio. It's perfect that we have a finance guest on here today because you can think about it like an investment portfolio, the compilation of things you're investing in to hopefully grow over time, build your financial goals, build a financial future that you want. Well, here on this podcast, I want to discover how successful people like John invest in themselves and build that foundation for their own success. So John, start us off with this. What are some skills, traits, habits, or mindsets that make up your own success portfolio?
Oh, that's a great question, Eric. And I think, you know, I mentioned the military. So some of that portfolio got formed when I was still pretty young with things like resilience and perseverance and being able to get knocked down and just get back up and keep going, right? So much of it is that, just never giving up, willing to get up, dust yourself off and keep moving. But the other thing too is books or knowledge. Nowadays it's more than books, it's websites and blogs and podcasts and YouTube. And it's all the resources that are out there that we can tap into for knowledge. A mentor once said that 10,000 years of human wisdom have been recorded in books. And all we have to do to download it is just crack the covers open from time to time. You know, and I took that to heart when I heard that way back when, and I've just been a book avid book reader ever since. I'm just constantly learning more. And I think that is another big part of that portfolio is just being open-minded, looking for new ideas and being willing to implement them. I often joke that I kind of treat my life as a great cosmic laboratory, and I get to be both the mad scientist and the rat.
For sure. Right? Yeah.
So, right. So I love to implement these ideas and, you know, sometimes they work out, sometimes they don't, but you learn a lot in the process. And I just, you know, I love that part of it.
Yeah. And specifically regarding like learning along the way or enjoying the journey, learning through the process, you probably also want to have in mind like where you're going to, like what you define being successful to be for yourself or your company, you know, whatever you're doing. So have you found that that definition of success has changed over time? And if you were to say right now, what is your definition of success? What would you say to that?
It's definitely changed over time. When I was much younger, my definition of success really revolved around a dollar sign. I believed that I could achieve a certain amount of income or a certain level of net worth, and that was what would lead to everything else. And now that I'm a little older and wiser, I realize that there's a lot more to it than that. So to me, success today to me is really about happiness. It's about what, you know, living the best life I can live and being as happy as I can be. And it's constantly in pursuit of fine tuning that. Right? That's successful. I'm able to live the way I want to live every day.
Yeah, I think that's probably a really good way to look at it with the happiness piece, because you can define that your own way. Like, what makes you happy is different than what makes me happy, different than what makes every listener probably happy. And so I think that should, you know, be an uplifting thing to hear, is that you can kind of set the bar your own way. You can go your own pace. A recent guest just mentioned run your own race. And I think that's a good way to listen and think about being successful, because you don't want to get caught up in comparing yourself to others. And as an entrepreneur, that's probably somewhat difficult to do at times. But also, John, with your company, so specifically with J. Ensley Financial, you just described the conventional financial system and why, you know, that maybe is a little bit broken and there's things in it that are not ideal. Are you able to kind of take the flip side of that and talk about what specifically you do differently at your company, how the planning is different than some other conventional financial planning things that other people have seen?
Yeah, I'd be happy to, Eric. So the conventional system basically says that we are moving towards capital gains, right? We're constantly building things that increase in value. And I think if, you know, Robert Kiyosaki has a couple of famous quotes about investing for capital gains is like gambling, right? We invest for cash flow, we invest for income. And I think we've got to keep focused on that income piece. So that's probably a huge difference between what I do and what maybe the conventional approach is I'm less concerned with the accumulation of capital gains than I am positioning assets to produce passive income, right? That's really where we want to go. I have what I've identified in my work over the last 11, 12 years is what I call money monsters. These are the things that are siphoning off our ability to accumulate wealth and generate passive income. And these are things like taxes, fees, crashes and crises, inflation, and debt interest are the five main money monsters that I'm concerned with in my practice. So what I do is try to devise things that minimize taxes, minimize fees, put up a barrier between us and those crashes and crises, let us take control of debt interest by becoming our own source of financing, and then, of course, making sure that we stay ahead of the inflation game. So that's really where I'm focused, and not so much on, you know, how big is the account going to get.
Yeah. So in the conventional financial planning system, it's like a casino, because you're banking on those accumulation of capital gains over time. And you're not necessarily focusing on cash flow in the here and now. Is that somewhat of a way to view that?
Cash flow in the here and now for sure, but also cash flow later. After retirement, it's called the distribution phase in financial planning lingo. And there's not enough time spent thinking about and positioning for the distribution phase. But I like the here and now comment. That was when that's what I was looking for way back when, is what can I do to keep me in control that'll put up a barrier between me and these systems that seem to have failure switches. And it's completely out of our control, right? When the 2008 debacle came along and the market crashed, it really didn't matter what you were invested in. It all went down, right? And it's completely out of our control. So I didn't want to be out of control. I wanted to be in control. And that's the other reason that I decided to take the money out of the employee stock ownership plan, is I wanted to be in control of my own destiny. And so that's what I do in my business today, is help people recognize that there's another way. I'm not saying the conventional way is terrible or that it can't work or whatever. There's plenty of evidence that it can, but there is another way if you really want to maintain control and safety and create income streams and really design your life the way you want it, then there are systems you can use to make that happen.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect way to lead into actually this next topic I wanted to discuss with you. And in doing research for this interview, you have, you know, kind of a concept of becoming your own pension. And I want to kind of tease out what specifically you mean by that. And maybe it ties a little bit into advice for a person who feels like they're doing the right things to prepare for retirement, or they're investing. They feel like they're saving appropriately, but they also feel like they're not getting ahead. You kind of alluded to that earlier. Just wanted to maybe see if those concepts are related, and also just talk about that becoming your own pension. Like, what do you mean specifically by that?
Yeah, that ties right back to passive income, right? Those are the three pillars, I'll say, of what I do, are safety, control, and passive income. And so that ties right to the passive income piece. And it, and really, this can be a myriad of different things. It can be something really simple. If somebody has money in conventional retirement accounts, their 401k, their individual retirement account, an IRA, a Roth IRA, something like that, if they have funds in those places, then there are financial tools out there. My practice is very life insurance product centric, but kind of the soapbox that I get on in my planning practice is that life insurance products don't get the billing that they should. There's a really a push to keep people in the equities markets in retirement planning, and there should be an integration. There should be an integration of all the tools that are available. So let's say we've got that IRA, that 401k, whatever, we've got some money in there. There are life insurance products called annuities. An annuity is simply an exchange of money today for a promise of a stream of income later. And a particular kind of annuity, a fixed index annuity, are the kind I like the best. And those have a guaranteed lifetime income rider or feature that are usually associated with them. So as one example of what it means to become your own pension, right? If we go back to the early 1900s, between the 1900s and 1960s, there were a lot of companies that paid pensions, and the risk was on the company, right? You worked for a company for 40 years. They were going to pay you a pension for the rest of your life. A pension is a monthly income, just like a paycheck that keeps coming every month, no matter what, right? When the legislation was passed in 1978 that led the way, it was called ERISA, and it led the way for the 401k and then the IRA and then the Roth IRA in the late 70s and early 80s, that literally shifted the focus away from a pension-like income into a capital gain approach. And I think that's where we started to go wrong a little bit. So what our goal here is to become our own pension is that monthly paycheck, month in, month out, it's coming in. And so we can take these retirement accounts, move them, tax-free, by the way, so you can move your IRA or 401k funds into one of these types of annuities, and it's still considered an IRA or a 401k. So there's no taxable event to move it over. And you can protect that piece, right? You're going to move a chunk of it. You're not going to move all of it. We're going to protect that piece from the market turmoil, the fee scenario, a lot of that kind of thing, the money monsters that I mentioned. And we're going to lock in a guaranteed income stream in the future that's extremely compelling. So we can literally lock in that pension-like income by doing that. And that's how you can become your own pension. So that's one method. You know, another method is we use cash value life insurance and accumulate cash value, and then use the unique features of borrowing against that cash value to invest in something like real estate or rentals or Airbnbs or something that will produce that cash flow. Again, that regular income that's coming in and that won't stop.
Yeah. And is that also related to being able to avoid like the money monster of a like market crash, like, you know, 2007, 2008, having that income, is that a way to basically mitigate that?
It absolutely is. Yes. Because the income's guaranteed. Once it starts, it's guaranteed for the rest of your life. And you can set it up as a joint and it'll guarantee both you and your spouse, both of your lives. And it's going to keep coming, and it has nothing to do with the market directly. So the fixed index, the index part of that is the interest crediting of the results you get are based in part on an index like the S&P 500, but you have no money physically invested in that index, which means when the index falls, your account values stay flat. They don't go down. And when the index rises, you get a benefit from that. Your account values rise. So you participate in the upside, but you never participate in the downside. And so it totally protects you from that market crash scenario. In fact, it eliminates the market crash scenario from that portion of your portfolio.
Yeah, because I think one thing a lot of people probably wonder about when they think about investing and financial planning and retirement specifically, just looking into the future, it's hard to have, you don't have a crystal ball. You can't tell when the market might be down, might be up, you know, might go sideways. You just have no clue. And so I think some people listening are probably curious if it's possible to have that continuous growth in the retirement account without any down years at all. And if they just, you know, if they decide they want to retire at 62 instead of 65, what if the market's in turmoil at that point in time? If it was, you know, a couple of years ago back in 2020, you might think, wow, I don't want to do that. I can't, you know, really afford to do that. And I mean, it sounds like this would be a way to have that where you have you know, very decent upside without having much downside at all. At least that from what you've told me, that sounds like it.
Yeah, you're right on the mark there, Eric. What you're really talking about is predictability and certainty, right? If we can eliminate uncertainty, eliminate that volatility, we can create not only a lot of peace of mind, but at least we know where we're going to get to. All the tools I use are very, very predictable. You know exactly what they're going to do because they're based on guarantees or things that are almost completely guaranteed, right? There's very little variability in these life insurance products or the annuity products. And so to me, it's just common sense that if you've got a portfolio, some percentage of that portfolio should be dedicated to these predictable tools. And I think the myth out there is that somehow you're going to be giving up something, that you're going to miss the big boom in the market because you had this thing over here. But I think when you really look at the numbers, that's probably not true. In rare circumstances, maybe a little bit, but what are you willing to give up to have that predictability and that peace of mind and that certainty of knowing what you're going to have and when you're going to have it?
And John, specifically regarding Jay Ensley Financial and the you know, niche service that you provide with that business, how long did it take you to discover these strategies? I mean, you mentioned your story, kind of what led you to, you know, think, hey, there's got to be a better way to you know, not have something like this impact my life this greatly in terms of my finances. But specifically, how long did it take you to devise those strategies and, you know, kind of test them to see if they work and you know, make sure that your clients are getting what you're advertising?
Well, and you know, Eric, that continues to this day. As I mentioned, I kind of like to think of my life as a cosmic laboratory, right? So I continue with this process to this day. But it really took a good 2-3 years of intense study. And fortunately, there were those who came before me that I could learn from, right? Some good mentors and teachers, so I could acquire their knowledge without the hard knocks that they went through. And it's been an interesting journey. So one of the things I've done as I've developed my practice, right? I started out as an insurance agent, the life insurance agent. And that's you know, just for the bank on yourself type insurance policies and so forth. And as I developed in my career, I decided, you know what? I'm convinced that this is the best, but what if there's some things I'm missing? What if I don't know? And so I actually jumped into the conventional side of things and got educated. I studied and passed the Series 65 exam, Investment Advisors Law Examination. I completed the Chartered Financial Consultant Designation Program through the American College of Financial Services, which is an equivalent designation to what most people know of as a CFP, Certified Financial Planner. And so this is all conventional financial system training. I went out and got the training that every financial advisor out there pretty much gets. And what I came out the other side of it is completely convinced that I am definitely on the right track. You know, it's a lot of the conventional system is based on what's called modern portfolio theory. And it's a very highbrow mathematical theory that is based on the typical advisor or the reasonable advisor and the kind of portfolio they would want that's as close to the, you know, horizon. And it's, I came to think of it as voodoo math, right? It could, because it's so disconnected. It's so abstract from real people and what real people want and feel and do. And this is what most of the financial plans out there are based on is this type of thing. You know, the advisor plugs numbers into a software system and it's using this highbrow mathematical theory to spit out, well, you have an 84% chance of success in your portfolio. These numbers really have no bearing in reality. They're just abstract numbers that this program, that, you know, that these algorithms produce. And so as I learned that side of it, I realized that the tools that I use and the strategies that I take with my clients are putting them in a real world better position. They are accumulating cash that they actually have access to, can use to make investments, to make major purchases, to, you know, whatever these things are. So it gave me a confidence level that went right through the roof that this is something people need and I'm passionate about sharing it with them.
Yeah, that's actually exactly where it seems to always go with talking with entrepreneurs. It's they have some sort of passion for a topic or an idea, and they also have an expertise or at least some type of a skill set in that realm to be able to kind of intersect those two. Boom, that kind of leads to your business creation. And at that point, it seems like that seems like a very common thread. So if you're listening right now, that's probably where you can think introspectively, like, what are you passionate about? What do you have some personal interest in? And what do you have either the skills for now, or what are you able to get skills in to be able to do something that is needed? Like John said, I mean, it's all about providing value and giving something that is worth, you know, whatever someone is paying for, obviously. So if a client of yours, John, is using Jay Ensley Financial, obviously you want them to get their money's worth, or you know, want their time to be well spent. You want your time to be well spent. And I think a big question I have in regarding investing and just saving and retirement planning is the debt versus the investing side. So as I am a post student, post grad, I went to pharmacy school and undergrad. I'm also getting an MBA right now. So I've taken a lot of, not loans for everything, but I do have a substantial amount of debt from that. And I'm wondering is it a better option if I was given the choice to only pick one, would I eliminate the existing debt first or invest in appreciating assets first? What would you recommend, John, and why?
So I love this topic, Eric. I'm glad you brought this up. I use a process in my practice that I call debt alchemy. It's called different things by different advisors that do what I do, but I call it debt alchemy. And one of the things I love about the particularly cash value life insurance is we can accomplish both of those at the same time. So we can be building equity in a properly designed, high cash value, low commission, whole life insurance policy, or the types of policies I'm talking about. We can build up cash value in these policies. And then we have the option of borrowing against the policy. And there's a particular unique thing that happens when we do that. When we borrow against the cash value in our whole life policies, the policy values continue to grow in the background as if we didn't borrow the money from them. And so it creates a unique situation where once we build a little cash up in this policy, we can borrow that cash to eliminate debt and then be funneling our payments back into the policy, paying those loans back. And at the same time, the value of that policy continues to grow. It continues to build at the same level, whether we borrowed from it or not. And so it gives us the ability, again, to transform, right? That's the alchemy reference, to transform debt and simultaneously be building equity and so forth. I can give you a couple of examples.
Sure. Yeah.
I have a client that I was working with recently, and we were doing a review, and he shared with me that he'd had some bad luck really in the last year. And he said, I have a little credit card debt I've had to build up because we, you know, had to put a roof on and the furnace went out and just whatever. And it turns out a little bit was like 50 some thousand dollars he has on credit cards at 20 plus, you know, 20, 25, 30% interest. And you could just hear the despair in his voice, right? He just had no idea how he was going to get on top of this. And it so happened that he had been putting some money into his whole life policy for a few years, and he had enough in there. And we put the debt alchemy program together for him. So if you map it out over 10 years, he was looking at $117,000 in interest payments over 10 years if he just kept doing what he was doing, barely keeping up with the minimum payments, that kind of thing, right? So we were able to take the initial chunk was $35,000 we took out of his policy, and we paid off all but two of those cards and moved that money into his policy. He was a little strapped, so I actually set the repayment up to free up about $300 or $400 in his budget every month and direct the rest of what he used to pay to the credit cards to the policy loan. Okay. So a year later, he continued to do that. And a year later, we then took the rest of the money and paid the rest of the credit cards off and then redirected those payments back to the policy. So long story short, he eliminated the 50 some thousand dollars debt in about 14 months. His interest on the policy loan, the loan will pay off in less than 5 years. And the total interest bill on that policy loan for that 5 years at this current repayment rate is going to work out to about $7,800, right? It's an effective annual interest rate of about 2 point something percent. So we went from 117,000 and probably never paying those off to $7,800 in interest on a policy loan and completely paid them off. And, you know, he's ecstatic, of course, as well as freeing up some more cash in his policy. And here's the thing, when he's done paying off the policy loan in 4.78 years or whatever it was, he's going to have an additional $20,000 is built up in his policy beyond what he had when he started with. So that's kind of the, a good example of how we can take care of debt and build an asset at the same time, you know, if we have the right tools.
Yeah, that's a great example. I'm really glad you shared that, John. And it really, I think, kind of answers that question with it. You can do both. You can eliminate debt and invest and appreciating asset at the same time. So I think that's motivating to hear. And it's not all dire. I mean, that situation, that much credit card debt, obviously, sounds like a lot. I mean, I think that would scare anybody if you look at your credit card statement and go, wow, how are we going to dig ourselves out of this? Kind of regardless of how much money you make, that's a significant chunk. And you mentioned Robert Kiyosaki earlier and, you know, author of Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I remember reading that book, loved it. That's kind of really where I started having that thought on the cash flow piece, you know, your income and your, you know, it's like, basically you want to be able to have some sort of passive income to possibly cover your expenses. At that point, you can exit like what Robert calls the rat race. And I think that's certainly a personal goal of mine. I'm sure a lot of you listening have that same aspiration to be, you know, financially free, so to speak. So, John, I'm wondering, in terms of your story you shared with, you know, kind of the, what led you to start your company, had you always had that feeling that you wanted to be an entrepreneur? I guess, when did that kind of start building within you? And kind of a flip side of that question too, or kind of a building block of it, the passive income piece, was that always a part of your makeup too? Did you always think that that way in regarding to your finances?
So I did not always think that way. It's been a development. And I did always have the entrepreneur bug. You know, when I left the company that had the ESOP and was going to do the IPO, I actually started up a little gourmet bakery and ran that for a little while and figured out pretty quickly that working 26 hours a day was probably not my forte, and I sold it and did okay on it. And I actually converted the basement of my house into a certified commercial bakery facility and ran this bakery out of the house. I have a family history with that growing up too. My mom did something similar in order to pay our private school tuition when I was a kid.
Oh my gosh.
So
that's
anyway,
cool.
Yeah, So I had that entrepreneurial bug for a long time. I just wasn't sure what to do, right? I did the bakery thing. That wasn't it for sure. And so it was just kind of one of those things when the real estate investment projects all fell apart, you know, I was still looking for that outlet. How am I going to do this? I want to be on my own. I don't want to work for somebody. It's just not in my nature. And, you know, I did a whole exercise years ago, and my three top core values are freedom, adventure, and service. Right. So that freedom piece is my number one core value. So working for someone else just never is going to fit my mold. And so when I came across the infinite banking information and so forth, it just, the light bulb went on, right? This is it. This is the thing that I can do to go out and be on my own and serve people and, you know, build that freedom and adventure in my own life while I'm doing it. And so it's just all the lines intersected, and I just knew this is it. This is what I got to do.
Yeah, I think it's helpful to hear that story. It's helpful to hear you say that. You know, it kind of naturally takes an approach where you had these thoughts, you had these kind of feelings about entrepreneurship, but you weren't sure which outlet it was going to fall in, and it kind of came together for you. So I think that's something that a lot of people get stuck on, including myself, is that if you have that entrepreneurial bug, you sometimes might get a little nervous, like, am I falling behind? Like, when am I going to get, like, I'm waiting for the magic idea to hit me. And I think sometimes you just have to continue to do what you're doing. You never really know when you're going to have that event occur. You mentioned the Great Recession. That was kind of a crisis point that also kind of spurred you onto a different path. And had a previous guest just recently, Leslie Danford, also shared that the COVID-19 pandemic was really kind of the catalyst for her to become, you know, the run the business that she now has. And if that had not happened, she probably wouldn't be doing that. So I think that, you know, a crisis can also be a catalyst. So I think it's tough to know when that'll happen, But John, if someone is listening and they're nervous about it, if they're like, okay, I hear what you're saying. I get that, you know, I got to be patient. I got to enjoy this process, but I'm very restless. What would your advice be to that, you know, budding entrepreneur to know that it's going to be all right? They'll probably find their niche down the road.
You know, the intersection of all the lines came at the end or in the midst of massive study, right? I threw myself into knowledge. How much can I learn? How fast can I consume it? Everything I could get my hands on. That's when the intersection came. And so I guess that would be my advice, if you will, is, you know, if you're not sure what to do and you're just a little uneasy about it, but you know, you want to do something, throw yourself into education, read everything, get your hands on, get into coaching programs, or, you know, whatever you can do to find, you know, Timothy Ferriss in the 4-Hour Workweek talks about finding your muse, right? And you got to find your muse, and it's different for everyone. So just throw yourself into everything you can do to run across your muse.
Yeah, that's great. I think the knowledge piece too resonates with, I'm sure, a lot of people listening that, you know, you come from having a lot of traditional school, you know what it's like to study. You just maybe need to dive into the right things that are going to push you to where you want to be in terms of your entrepreneurial goals. And John, do you have a favorite book that you've read? We mentioned Robert Kiyosaki, you just mentioned Tim Ferriss. Is there an absolute favorite book that you've read that has, you know, drastically impacted how you behave and how you act today?
I have a really hard time picking a favorite. I love Robert Kiyosaki's books. Kind of like you mentioned, the Rich Dad, Poor Dad book was one of the early ones that really got my brain working and going down the path. I mentioned the 4-Hour Workweek. I could pick that as a favorite on some days. It was, you know, that book really completely changed how I looked at time management and the ability to design a lifestyle, those kinds of things. And then of course, you know, I have to give kudos to the two books about this specific concept, this whole life insurance concept. So Becoming Your Own Banker by R. Nelson Nash, and Bank on Yourself or The Bank on Yourself Revolution by Pamela Yellen, are two fantastic books for the concept specifically.
Yeah, fantastic. I'll tag those in the show notes. And it also, I'm glad you mentioned it, the bank on yourself concept. Can we just briefly talk about that as we kind of wind this interview down, just to make sure people are on the same page with what that means and how it might benefit really everybody to have a little piece of that in their financial plan as well?
Yeah, for sure. So that's the fifth money monster that I mentioned, the debt interest, right? Taking control of the debt interest. So I told the story about the gentleman and his credit card debt, and that's a piece of it. So what I think the crux of it is, we put money into these life insurance policies, this cash value life insurance, and it builds up equity. So life insurance companies are highly regulated. They can't invest in just anything. They're the regulators. They won't let them just go out and buy crypto or something. They have to be able to meet their future obligations and so forth. One of the investments the regulators love is when life insurance companies can make loans to their own policy owners. So effectively what's happening is, if you're a policy owner and you're working with a mutual life insurance company, that company will make loans available to you, and they're using that policy that you own as the collateral. So we can borrow against our policies up to the amount of cash value that's in the policy. So if the policy has X amount of cash value, that's the limit of what we can borrow. The collateral is actually the death benefit. And so the life insurance company is, they'll make the loan. It's part of their investment portfolio. So they're going to charge us some interest to do that. It's very low interest the way it's calculated. And there's a couple of things that happen. Because the death benefit is the collateral, we also have complete control over the repayment terms. So we can pay it back over any amount of time we want. We can start, we can stop, we can increase, we can decrease. We have a ton of flexibility because these are non-recourse loans. The policy is the collateral. So we have control over the repayment. So from an investment standpoint, that is tremendously helpful. I have clients who do real estate flips, and they may not make a single payment on their policy loan until they sell the flip. Then they go pay the whole thing off, and they have the ability to do that. That's no problem. So banking on yourself, or bank on yourself, is this idea that we can build up an asset, we can build this accumulating asset in these policies, and then use the unique features of these policy loans to be the bank.
so that we don't have to go borrow money at nowadays 8% or 9% over here to make this investment. We can borrow the money at, depending on how you set up the repayment, anywhere from 2 to 5% from our own policy. And that policy is going to continue to grow as if I didn't borrow from it. And I can pay it back any way I want to. And I don't have, you know, like if I purchase a piece of property or a vehicle or something with that loan, the policy is the collateral. So I own that thing. I don't have to tie it up with the financing. So there's just all these benefits where when you can be your own source of financing, it opens up a lot of doors for you.
Yeah, thanks, John. I appreciate you sharing that. That was new to me as well. I was interested in, I wasn't going to research that intentionally before talking to you because I wanted to hear it from you. I'm probably going to interpret this in the way that's not, you know, the easy way. I'm going to think about it too analytically, and I'm glad you shared that in a simplistic way. So appreciate that. And John Ensley, honestly, can't thank you enough for being on the show. I think these insights are incredibly profound. Should leave everybody feeling, you know, a little bit less scared about planning for retirement, investing, saving, you know, getting rid of your debt. If someone wants to reach out and contact you personally, what would be the best way for them to do that?
So I have a page set up where you can schedule an appointment with me, free strategy session, you know, 20, 30 minutes or however long, really. And my suggestion is always you need to talk to someone. I'm, of course, happy to be the someone and who's just going to understand what you want to accomplish, what your goals are, what your concerns are, and then help educate you on the tools and the ways you can get there. Not sell you something, not shove a concept or an idea down your throat, but listen to you and help you understand what's available and help you get to a decision. And that's my promise to anybody that decides to set up a strategy session with me is I don't have a sales pitch. I'm not going to be trying to shove anything down anyone's throat. I'm in this. I'm passionate about helping people understand these concepts and implement in their lives and be successful. And so, you know, that's my only agenda, really. And that site is Jump On With John, J-O-H-N, jumponwithjohn.com. It'll take you straight into my calendar once you hit the link there, and you can schedule a 20, 30 minute strategy session and we can have a conversation. That's the best place to start.
That sounds great. Well, John Ensley, the founder of J. Ensley Financial, thanks again for being a guest today. Really appreciate everything you've offered. We'll be in touch with you soon. We look forward to following your journey and we'll catch you later.
Thanks so much, Eric. It's been great.